Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man for whom transfer deadline day is easy because he never goes to bed anyway. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
I'm so tired.
You really are. I mean, you always are tired, bless you.
Yeah.
But that isn't...
Doesn't it finish at 8 o'clock today?
No, it's 11. It's 11.
Oh, it's 11. I thought it was...
Back to 11. I think it went down. We matched up with others and went down to 5 for a while. Mm. Now we're back to 11. Do you remember when I think it used to finish for a while, it finished at 12, and then we put in papers to get an extra hour to try to get Moutinho over the line, or at least that was the rumor. That was a period of time in my life where I actually had a good sleeping pattern, and I remember being just like so exhausted, fighting every fiber of my being to stay awake to find out that we hadn't signed Moutinho.
Yeah, this is the thing. It's 11 o'clock deadline, but then you can do deal sheets as well to take it beyond the deadline. So it all seems a bit ludicrous, but that's the position we're in. Now I'm gonna go somber for a moment because we've got some sad news. Ashley Marie Savage, sister to Ross, who many of our listeners and subscribers will know, sadly passed away after a lengthy battle with cancer. Ross is arranging for there to be a minute's applause on 39 minutes at the Brighton match. I have already passed on my condolences to Ross personally, but you know, on behalf of the three of us, we're so sorry for Ross's loss. I'm friends with Ross on Facebook, so I've been sort of following this from afar, and I can honestly say I found his updates incredibly moving because his sister seems like an extraordinary person who tackled this in a very optimistic way, which is moving in and of itself. But the sort of love and tenderness that Ross has showed along the way and his whole family shown has really been quite something special. And he really did her proud in her final days. And he's a wonderful man. And I'm just so sorry, Ross. In other news, one of our listeners and a huge Spurs fan, Joshua Granger, he has launched a fundraiser. His wife, Verity, has an ultra-rare life-shortening genetic condition. And there's a fundraiser that he has launched to pay for some treatment for her. He needs to get a lot of money together. And we're trying to get the word out, or he's trying to get the word out, and with people trying to sort of promote it as widely as possible. We're going to put the fundraising link in the show notes. We'll tweet it as well. If you can spare some money to support Joshua and his family, that would be lovely. It's such a terribly, terribly tragic read. At least give it a read, even if you're not in a position to be able to support that. And send some love Joshua's way. And same to Ross. What they're both going through is terrible, absolutely terrible. And it seems wrong to now go on to talk about football after that. But we're a football podcast, so on we march. And hopefully this pod can provide some distraction to Ross and to Joshua as well. Let's talk transfer window. We've got nothing better to talk about, have we? And we're recording this at roughly 4:30 on the day of the transfer deadline.
So Bentancur was announced by Spurs 5 minutes ago, and Kulusevski was announced by as a sale by Juventus sort of 6 minutes ago. So that's where we're at the time, isn't it?
And we've seen the announcement from Spurs also for Tongi and Ndombele going on loan. So we know a couple of incomings and at least one outgoing. We expect at the point of recording that Dele's outgoing permanent transfer will be announced, and that Lo Celso's loan with a view to a permanent will be announced, and that Brian Hill's loan will be announced also. So let's tackle the incoming first. Let's do it in chronological order. Bentancur. Bardi, what are your thoughts?
As Nathan would say, this is net good. I'm happy with this. I think Bentancur offers us something that Conte will use. At the moment, we can't hide from the fact that he hasn't been using Lo Celso and Ndombele. I think this is a person that he will use. He's a decent player. He's not perhaps the midfielder that we really wanted, but I think he's a great addition to the squad and a very, very useful player. And I'm very happy with this.
Nice. Nathan, do you know a lot about him?
I know a bit about him. So recently for Juventus, and also before as well, he's been used as like the number six, and doesn't really get the best out of him. He's not like a good sort of controller of the tempo. His passing isn't all that sort of crisp like you want your number six to be. His best season for Juventus, that is, probably came under Sarri, where he was playing in the midfield three as the box-to-box player, arriving in the final third and doing some good there. So I imagine that is what the idea for him is that he will probably replace Skip in the starting 11 and play in front of Højbjerg, or slightly more advanced than Højbjerg, and be the box to box runner. I think that he does improve our starting 11. He certainly improves the squad. I think he's a good player. I just think that like this mold of player, right? This sort of box to box 8/6 type player who's defensively strong and a bit of an all-rounder is like, that's a place where we were strong. We're gonna force Oliver Skip out of the starting 11. I'm sure there's plenty of minutes for him throughout all the matches we're gonna play, but we're leaving our center backs situation fragile. He doesn't really improve our creativity very much. We still got a right wing back situation. So like, yeah, he's definitely like, and he's a cheap fee, right? We've really done well like getting two undervalued players out of Juventus books. But I also just think I go back and I look at the squad and I think this wasn't the most pressing concern for me.
I agree. I think we could have probably used that money somewhere else, but I just don't think the players that we wanted or we could get in those roles were available. And they've taken a chance. Juventus needed to clear up some money and clear up some wages after signing Vlahovic. And I think we've done a good thing here. And I'm happy with it. We'll talk about Kulusevski later, but I think this is a smart signing that will probably do pretty good. And maybe Skip keeps his role. Maybe we move out Højbjerg, which would be an excellent win.
So it's really interesting to get Nathan's read on this, because my take from everything I'd read and I've seen him play internationally several times and I feel like I've got a good handle on the sort of what he's like as a player, even though I don't necessarily know the roles he's been used in his previous clubs. But my read was that he is equally adept playing six and eight. And I think now we're in a position where we've got four midfielders who can all play six and can all play eight in Højbjerg, Skip, Winks and Bentancur. And it might be that they do one better than the other, but it gives a bit more cover across the midfield in terms of the type of player that that Conte wants. Obviously, Paratici has a very good knowledge of him. He signed him. He understands his strengths and weaknesses. And if you'd asked me at the start, when Conte was appointed in January, would I be happy with Lo Celso, Dele and Ndombele leaving and a sort of slightly more functional midfield player coming in, I'd have said I was very unhappy with that. But after the Leicester match, where I kind of had this switch flick and I'm like, okay, the creativity comes from the system, not from the players, I feel a bit more at peace about it. But I do agree with Nathan's perspective that I feel like the priority was other areas of the squad. And let's talk, before we move on to that and talk holistically, I want to dive in a little bit on Kulusevski, who I really like a lot. And Bardi, you're super excited about this one.
Yeah, I mean, just go back and watch his Parma games when he was really flying, and the reason why Juventus went for him. He's a wonderful player. I don't know where I saw it, but he's got that kind of, someone said he's got the De Bruyne physique where he looks sure. kind of slow, but he's not. And it's just because he's really pale and ginger, people think he's slow. That means he can't be fast. I think he's a wonderful player with a wonderful left foot and the physicality to match. I reckon he could play up top. I probably see him playing in midfield. I don't think he's been signed to be a right wing back. That's for sure. I think he's.
was that? Have people been suggesting that?
I've seen people okay. suggest that. I think he's a great player. Nima loves him, which is always a good sign. And I'm very happy with this. This is a brilliant, brilliant signing. And a player, like Nathan said right at the start, undervalued. And there's good value in this transfer. The amount of money spread over the amount of years that it is, it's good. I can't believe Juventus have let him go, but especially with Chiesa being injured. But Juventus are a weird place now, right now. Max Allegri is kind of on that precipice of perhaps becoming a dinosaur, stepping into that Mourinho kind of world. And it's a bit weird what he's doing with his team. And I think we've really got something here.
Well, with Bentancur, they've just brought in Zachariah, who was going to be mm-hmm. on a free in the summer. They brought him in for $5 million, so that kind of makes sense. And I think they're pretty heavy in midfield as well. Like, McKennie's taken up a lot of minutes in different roles. Locatelli's not adapting that well, but obviously he's a brilliant player. So I get that they sort of got, like, a lot of bodies in midfield, but then there's just general turnover. But I mean, Juventus fans are happy that these two players have been moved on, but I think that you shouldn't go by the impression you're getting from Juventus fans. I really like Kulusevski. I think he sort of takes up the like impression of a winger a lot of the time. He looks like he wants to dribble, and then he'll use that to bait a defender, and he plays a lot of really well disguised sort of assists and shot assists and stuff, and I think that's the strongest part of his game. So I think that, I mean, yeah, I was just saying with regards to Bentancur that, like, I want us to have more creativity, and I think that Kulusevski does that without him being like, he's not a, you know, an Eriksen type player who wants to sort of control the tempo of the game, and he's not an Ndombele player who's just immediately always playing the killer ball too much, right? I think that he is creative in a way that should be fairly adaptable to what Conte wants from his team. So maybe this is sort of the compromise between sort of having more playmakers in the side and having players who, you know, do exactly as they're told. I think that he knits that together quite well. I think he's positionally quite versatile. He's played up top for Juventus, which I think is weird for him. He kind of drifts into more of a sort of number 10 role from playing up top. He played mainly right wing for Parma in his youth, and possibly again he could play as sort of an eight in a three-man midfield as an advanced eight. I think that's feasible for him. So he gives us a lot of versatility in that sense, but I think he's probably best suited to playing the inside right position in the 3-4-3, which means that he's competing for Lucas. Now, certainly, I believe that he should displace Lucas in the starting 11, but then I also thought that Lo Celso should displace Lucas, and Dele should displace Lucas, and Bergwijn should displace Lucas. So, you know, I guess I can't bet on that. But yes, I think he certainly competes to get game time. But and again, the same thing as before is, like, we just keep buying. Like, in the summer, we bought in Hill. We spent 25 million plus Lamela to bring in Hill, you know, who's not the exact same player, but, you know, is a sort of like a supporting attacker, right? We've loaded up. We've brought in Bergwijn. We've brought in Hill. We've loaded up on these supporting attacking players, not just wingers, right? And then we go, oh, we've only got room for a couple, and then we're going to try to move one. We brought in Lo Celso, whatever. And it's like, I don't know, he's good, but we just keep focusing all our transfers in this one area where we're overloaded and not where we need more centre backs and right wing backs. I'm making the same point again, but it's kind of baffling me, to be honest.
I think reasonably so. We have just, as we're recording, we just announced the signing of Dejan Kulusevski.
Nice.
Very, very happy to get that one over the line. Yeah, I mean, again, I agree with Nathan's point about more wingers. But I really like him as a player. He's someone I'm quite into. Go on, buddy.
A lot of people, a lot of people are getting scared by the fact that we're signing Juventus rejects, and these are players that we could have got ages ago. But just Juventus aren't quite like Bayern Munich. When Bayern Munich sells someone, they're washed. There's nothing left there. just steer clear of them. But I think Juventus, they sold Cancelo, and they swapped him for, who they swapped him for? Was it Danilo they swapped him for? Anyway, and Cancelo is now worth double the amount of money. They sold Spinazzola, who's the greatest left back that football's ever seen. They sold Romero, and then we go and buy Romero for five times the price. Demiral, yeah, they sold as well. They're not so smart at signing players. They bought Ronaldo. They spent £75 million on De Ligt, who doesn't look great. So just because the fact Juventus let him go doesn't mean that he's a washed player. They spent so much money on Bernardeschi, and he's terrible. So I don't think the fact that he's a Juventus reject should come into play here.
It's a bit like the clubs that are going to pick up Dele, Lo Celso and Ndombele from us.
A little bit, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, exactly. It's like PSG fans going to Lyon fans, oh, you've just signed a Tottenham reject. Not quite. Sometimes things don't always work out. I think the attributes that those two offer are good for Spurs and lift us up another level. It's very sad about Hill, but maybe Hill just wasn't right. He's just not quite right now. And I'm not sure whether the loan back to Spain, it will be good for him long term. Perhaps he should have stayed in England. But, you know, at the moment, I'm quite happy with how things are going.
I do think the Kulusevski situation is weird from Juventus, right? They brought in, he was on loan at Parma, but they brought in this 20-year-old who is this like sort of the chance creator, right? Before anything else, he creates chance. Sometimes he creates chances through the dribble. More often he creates chances through the pass. Sometimes he does it from out wide. Sometimes he does it in the middle. But what he does is he passes to other players in the box. They brought him in. He's played up top a bunch. He's not scored a whole bunch of goals. Now he's 21, 22. And they're like, let's move this guy on. they've brought in like, you know, a really talented prospect. And because he hasn't completely set the world on fire, they're moving him on. I understand that they've brought in Vlahovic and they want to like turn over funds. But like, it just seems like a weird place to go for that.
It's just Juventus are a weird place, and there's something I heard on a podcast recently that Juventus, they want something, they just go and get it without actually thinking whether or not they should have it. And I think they did it here, and they've done it with Vlahovic, they did it with Dybala, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But in this case, I think it's good for us. Plus, you know, Sweden, it's good to build some links with Sweden again. It's been a while since we had a good Swedish player.
So I was already fairly familiar with Kulu, but I've been watching some scouting videos over the last 24 hours or so, and I noticed a couple of things. So I was wondering, you know, I'm trying to convince myself that we might play the 3-5-2 at some point, and I was wondering whether he might play as an 8 in that system, but I think more likely is what Nathan said, that it is a 3-4-3 signing. The reason I say that is because he does some really good work in the press, and a lot of that is often backwards pressure. And I noticed a common thing that comes up in the scouting videos with Kulusevski is that he's often nicking the ball from the blind side, something which will be very, very useful when we don't have the ball in the 3-4-3, I think. He's also got this really excellent upper body strength. So whilst he might not be absolutely rapid, what he's really good at is getting himself between the defender and the ball and putting himself in a position where you either have to foul him. You're not going to get him off the ball when he's in full flow. You either have to foul him or you give up on catching him. In a way that, you know, you've already mentioned De Bruyne, and I think De Bruyne is exceptional at doing that also. And that's where the similarity is for me in terms of their style. And actually, it's a little bit Moussa Dembele.
It's kind of why he's played some games up top, is that like he has sort of the physicality and the hold up play to bring others in for that position and then be creative. It's just sort of a weird fit for him. But yeah, he has a decent physical presence. He's big, and he's an absolute hustler, as you say. He really puts the defensive work in.
Yeah, that's going to make him a real crowd favourite from early on, I would suggest. The other thing is he's a young player. He's 21. So, you know, I like to sort of slot them in amongst our squad and work out who they're older than, who they're younger than. He's younger than, Emerson Royale, Japhet Tanganga, and even Toby Amole. That's how young he is. But he's basically got three solid years of good minutes played behind him. So he's young in age, but he's not young in experience. He's someone who's got decent experience. Both Bentancur and Kulusevski have, I believe, am I right in saying they both won the league? Yeah, they have both won the league, haven't they, as well?
Yes.
At Juventus. So So there's title winning experience there. And one final thing on both of them, FBref have got this really useful bit of data on footedness of players now, that based on the number of the passes that players play, which foot they use to play them. And both of these players are more both footed than basically all of our other outfield players. And that's partly going to be because of the position they play and whatnot. But I do think that's interesting. I think Bentancur being more two footed than any of our midfielders, especially Skip, who's spectacularly one footed according to the data, it does open things up in the middle of midfield in terms of angles. And Kulishevsky, when you watch him, is not worried at all about using his right foot. If he goes on the outside, he's very willing to swing in a right footed cross, and that is absolutely married up with the data.
It is quite rare for a left footed player to be two footed. Normally left footed players are pretty happy to be specialists of the left foot and
because,
not much else.
Because there are fewer of them and they just get stuck out on the left wing or left back when they're growing up. And so they end up basically just using their left foot constantly.
Do you remember when England had no left footed players?
Yeah.
Was it Steve Froggatt or Guppy? Steve Guppy got a call up to the England squad for like 5 years, half a decade. They tried to find a left-footed player in your country, and they couldn't do it.
Well, we switched to a back three and gave. I missed that. Yeah, well done for picking him up there, Nathan. We switched to a back three and played Graham Nassau as the left wing back because we didn't have any other left-footers. Anderson played out there a long time for England as well.
Ruined Paul Scholes to make him as a left winger.
Yeah, exactly. Jason Wilcox is another they tried to get tune out of. Yeah, it was a real dearth. I think these are interesting signings. Let's talk about outgoings. Let's get the easy ones out of the way first. And Ndombele got on loan with a view to a 60-odd million.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to pay that, are they?
Even if he
lights the league on fire again, which he could do, but I think he probably takes a while to settle in. I don't know how good a position Leon are in at the moment. They still can't afford that. That's for other clubs to know about. That's for PSG to be aware about in the summer, isn't it? You know,
I think also it's possibly... let's not get burnt in the same way we were with Van Foyt again, where he ended up going for less money than he was ultimately worth at the end of a loan. You know, he really excelled on loan, and we probably could have squeezed an extra 5 to 10 million out of the Bayern club. So there's no point selling yourself short.
I got the impression it was more comms. It was face saving from Spurs that we let him go out on loan for 6 months and then just chucking that in there. Like Nathan said, they're not going to pay that amount of money, but it shows that we're actually paying attention to the finances.
I think that PSG is a really good place for him. I was kind of happy for him for a moment that was on the books. And maybe it will be again in the summer. I think that I want to see him do well, even though I feel very disrespected by him after the slow walk off the pitch and everything else. I still kind of want to see the best for him, even if that's just so I can be proven right. But I just don't want to see him as like a total flop. You know, I hate that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, also because the situation at Spurs has been so shit, it must have been awful for some of these players. Sure. They joined under false pretenses, basically. And I know that's part of football, isn't it? That's the thing, it is part of football.
There's this big discussion, right, going on about like how the summer of 2019 we bought in Ndombele, Lo Celso, Clark and Sessegnon, and it's the worst summer of all time. Every single one of them has been, but I think that was a really good summer. I just think it didn't work out, and that's the reality of football transfers sometimes. But it's also like those were good transfers for like continuing long term with Pochettino. The moment that wasn't the case anymore, like it undermines in a vacuum, and that has to be like my friend Thiago says, you can only analyze a transfer based on the information that was available at the time that it was made, and you can't just work backwards from the result because there's too much chaos in what happens. Sometimes you sign a really good player who's a really good fit and it doesn't work out for another reason. Sometimes you sign a bad player who shouldn't fit and then they completely explode as a player for no obvious reason, right? I think that we did good business that summer. We did worse, you know, we did no business the summer before and we let things slip under Pochettino to that point that those transfers couldn't save him. But I think that bringing in Ndombele to this club was a really smart move that couldn't have worked out much worse than it has done.
Absolutely. So I don't think any of us are too concerned about Ndombele leaving at this point after the Morecambe match.
Sure.
Lo Celso, I think Bardi will be celebrating him leaving. Am I right, Bardi?
No, I'm not going to celebrate him leaving. I think there was probably something there that we could have used. And if he leaves and we don't use that money or those wages to do something else, then I'm not going to celebrate that. Rather like Ndombele, I think it's also a little bit sad that this hasn't worked out. I think there is a good player in there somewhere, but it hasn't worked for him. So no, I wouldn't celebrate it. I don't hate Lo Celso.
I think it's a shame. I think after what happened in the Chelsea game that it was inevitable. I mean, we essentially forced him out, right? At that point, it was you're not going to be in my plans, find a new club territory. And in many ways, it's better to be honest with players and better to be clear with them. If they're not going to be in plans, there's no point keeping them around. However, I did sort of feel that he was one who, if he came in for an injured player, that he really could make a case for himself and keep his place in the team, because I do think there's a lot more there than what we've seen in his time at Spurs. I think he's a good player.
I think there were reportings of falling out. I think people aren't happy with him on a personal level. Because again, I think that like when he's played, he's been mostly good. He's had some bad appearances when we've been a bad team. But I mean, the thing with Lo Celso you have to remember is that he was alone with an option, and we activated the option based on the performances that he put up. Yeah, it's not like we bought him and then went, oh, I wonder how this will work out. We were like, yes, we definitely want to go through with the agreed option based on how well he plays, you know, during your project restart or whatever. So I don't know. There was definitely something there, and again, I thought he'd played okay in his few minutes under Conte. So, but there's more going on. I think we're frustrated with the injuries. So it's just a cutting losses kind of thing.
Yeah. Sure. No, I get that. And I think on the face of it, getting Lo Celso and Ndombele out and Bentancur in, who fits what Conte is trying to do better, that seems like a logical step. So we move on to Dele.
He's basically never been injured in his life, by the way, Bentancur. He's. I mean, so was Lo Celso before he came in. So maybe I shouldn't speak in case I curse him. But he's been available forever, essentially.
Son Renity says, "Can we please keep the Dele eulogy short? Would love to hear about the future of our squad." And I'm afraid the answer to that is no. We can't keep the Dele eulogy short. I appreciate that there are lots of people who are absolutely sick of Dele. They'd moved on 2 years ago. They moved on when Mourinho moved him on, basically, from being a part of a team. I am not one of those people. I feel very, very sad about Dele leaving. So what we know so far is what Fabrizio Romano has tweeted whilst we've been recording. Everton are in a bit of a pickle. They've got a couple of loan players already. They can't have any more loans. They've got a financial fair play issue, so it's going in the books as a free transfer. There will be 12 million payable after 20 games, and there are various bonuses for the next few years, and it could reach up to 40 million. I mean, who knows how the deal's structured? Spurs do crazy things with transfer structuring. That's, you know, the size of the fee was upsetting when Matt Law reported it was 10 million. I was thinking, what the hell are we doing? Why would we do that? But other than that, it's not really come into my thinking. What has come into my thinking is this is a player who has brought me so much joy to watch for Spurs. There's something unbelievably satisfying as a fan about unearthing a young gem in the lower leagues, MK Dons, League One, and then them just kind of exploding in a way that got everyone's attention. And Dele came in and he basically started scoring from the off. He was a central midfielder for MK Dons, and he came into our team and he pretty much played up front from the off, and he started scoring and he didn't stop. And he kept going and he kept going and he kept going, and he would have these performances where he did nothing for 89 minutes of the match, and then he would pop up with a goal. And I would be tweeting, it's time to take Dele off and put someone on who's going to get us a goal, and then Dele would score, and he'd make me look stupid, and he'd do it week in, week out, and he was so consistent and so impressive for one so young at some of the things in football that I think are some of the most difficult things, and they are and appreciating space, arriving in the box at the right time to score a goal, and linking things with clever flicks. And, you know, he was quite wasteful at times with some of his flicks, but one of those flicks led to one of the most famous goals in our club's history. So net good, as Bardi and Nathan have said. I'm gutted. I'm gutted to see him go because I really loved watching him. I'm also gutted because Dele is the reason that so many young Spurs fans are Spurs fans. He's such a kind of cult hero, especially for younger people. He's really cool. He's really fun. He's got a great energy about him. He's always had fun goal celebrations. He had that lovely relationship with Eric Dier. And then similarly with Son Heung-min, he's always felt like a really sweet natured part of the squad who just links, gelled everyone together. It really felt like Spurs was family to him. And I felt that. I really felt a connection to him and the team that he was a big part of. And this does feel like, it does feel like a big loss. And in the same way that Vertonghen leaving was a loss, or Christian Eriksen leaving was a loss, this is a tough one to take.
I hate this move for him, by the way. I think this is a terrible. Like, for me, right, in my opinion, the main problem with Dele over the last few years is that he is a ceiling raiser, right? He improves good teams. He makes good teams great. He doesn't make bad teams good. And he's going to Everton, who are a fucking mess. And they're also bringing in Van de Beek, who's a similar player. To have both of those players on your squad is a mess. To loan one in and then fill your loans, and then you can't loan in the other one, so you're buying him. They're just an absolute abomination of a football club, and I think that this is really bad for him, and I think that we might only get, you know, 12 million out of the deal, and I think that his stock will continue to plummet. I really hate this for him, and I do care about Dele. So, yeah, I mean, he could have, you know, maybe he could have gone to, if he waited longer, or, you know, forced through other deals or whatever there. I think there were better options. I mean, I think almost every football club in the world, except for Everton, is a better option because they're shambles. Apologies to the, you know, the three Everton fans who occasionally listen to this podcast.
No, I think you make a really good point. Chris Summersell and I had a long discussion about this on Straight Off the Training Ground, which is our Patreon pod that we do. And Chris was pointing out that one thing Dele is absolutely exceptional at is scanning and getting a picture of what's around him, and mm-hmm. using that knowledge and using that sort of picture to arrive in space at just the right time to do stuff that whereby the opposition defence can't stop him. And the best way to get the best out of that ability is to have someone in the team who can pick out his run. Someone like Christian Eriksen, for example. And Everton just don't have anyone that is capable, really, of creative passing from deep. Maybe Andre Gomez, to some degree, can do some of that. I don't think he's going to get loads out of Dele, frankly. I really agree, Nathan, with what you've said. I don't think it is a great move, unless they sign someone else on, you know, before the deadline's up. Bardi wrote a beautiful piece about Dele for the ex-subs. You nearly made me cry, Bardi, to be honest, and you did make Callie cry, our beloved Callie, who is Dele's biggest stan in the Discord. She is traumatized by this transfer. Dele's one of the reasons why she is a Spurs fan. She absolutely loves him. She follows everything he does, and so supportive of him in the most wholesome way possible. And I really feel for Callie. I just want to give her a hug. Bardi, tell us about the piece you wrote.
Because the thing about Dele is, as I say most weeks, is my relationship with Dele has broken. I've got to the point now where I don't see him as a useful Tottenham Hotspur player. And tongue in cheek, I started this. I was gonna go in on Dele and just say a few mean things. And then I started thinking a little bit more deeply about him. And then what was it that I loved about Dele? Because I spent many years loving him. And then I just decided just to remove all the cynicism from my life and just go back and just remember what Dele was when he first signed. And I was at the Leicester game away when he scored his first goal. So that gives me a little bit of a connection with him, that I remember that moment. And just the joyfulness that he used to play. I don't think we've had a player who just played with joy, who would just bound around the pitch and just do magical things. And like you said, not do anything for a while and then just do magic. And I do think in the years he's tried to grow up, he's tried to find himself, he's tried to be pushed into this box of what type of player you are. I do think he's lost the joy of football, and we've lost the joy of watching him. And it is very sad that he's now going to an Everton team which is so devoid of magic and hope. And I am worried about him. I get the funny feeling that he will retire. and just walk away from football, because I just don't see that energy and that happiness in him. And it's sad. He was like a puppy when we bought him. Legs, energy, smiling, playing football in a beautiful way. And it's just not been there for some time. And I think the real challenge is not Everton getting out the best out of him, but him getting the best out of himself and rediscovering what it was that made him so good. And that's the big challenge for him. I will miss him, but kind of like he's been gone for a while already.
I retweeted something earlier on from Collins T26 about Ndombele, which was, I think... So he said, the paradox of Ndombele, we needed him to create the next good situation for us, and he forever needed us to create it for him.
Yeah.
And I sort of feel the same about Dele's move to Everton. I sort of feel like they're both going to be waiting for one another to light the spark. Nathan's right. Dele is someone who's going to raise a team from good to great, not someone who's going to raise a team from bad to average or good, I don't think. Maybe we'll be proven wrong. Maybe he'll go in and play the box-to-box midfield role. And because we saw him play that so effectively against Liverpool, and maybe he'll make a success of that and not be getting on the end of creative passes, progressive passes. Maybe it'll be different. I don't know. Let's see what Frank Lampard can do.
He should have gone to Burnley. He would have a great time playing off their massive forward.
The other outgoing player is Brian Heal. And Canervo says, what do you think of Heal going to Bordalas' team? I don't know about his Valencia tactics, but in Getafe, his wingers were playing almost like wingbacks, like Bergwijn did under Mourinho. Is it good for Heal's development? What did you make of this one, Nathan?
Probably not. Like, I don't know. Yeah, he doesn't need time like developing his defensive game or whatever. I don't think that's what we've seen. If he needs further time to acclimatise to England, then why send him back to Spain? If he's homesick, then I guess so, but I don't know. The thing is that like he ought to be getting minutes, but he's also not so desperate for minutes because he's played over a season of league football, right? He's a semi-developed player. So being a squad player who plays cup games, who comes off the bench, that's, you know, for a team who are at least aspiring to be a Champions League team, you know, I think that's right for him at the moment. So I don't know. I mean, I understand that we're just trying to get players off our books at the moment, but again, it's like I was saying about Kulusevski before. It's like we just keep having massive turnover in our attacking midfield department, and I don't know. He's a good talent. Like literally when we signed Hill, I made a video in which I said like he's a good talent, but I don't understand his role with us at the moment, and people thought I was really down on him. But it's like this. He was worth a large amount of money that we paid for him. He's a really special up and coming talent, and I don't know. I think that we've done some poor squad building.
He's also a left winger primarily, and we've barely played him on the left wing. I mean, I think your point about homesickness is the only logical take that I can think of as to why we would send him to Valencia. That he's struggling so much to adapt that we're just saying, right, okay, you go home, maybe keep learning your English in your downtime, and come back in the summer, understanding the language a bit better and in a better place mentally, perhaps.
So there was a report of that nature, and then I think he replied, like, questioningly. So I don't know if you know how much you want to take him at his word, but he's pushed back against the idea himself.
Mm.
And yet he's going on loan back to Spain when I don't think he needs to.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right that a Premier League or Championship loan would have been, you know, from Spurs' perspective, that would have seemed much more sensible. But here we are. Bardi, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's a strange transfer. I still think there's a player there. We'll see how this works out. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ian Williams says, so clearing out the deadwood and bringing in a couple of new quality players is good, but the squad being smaller than before the start of the window is no bueno, no?
I mean, there's squad size in terms of just like the actual raw number of senior players, and there's squad size in terms of players that you're actually going to use, right? So I guess if we've improved there, you know, if you trade out Ndombele, who you're not going to play, for Bentancur, who is going to, again, I think, replace Skip in the starting 11, then you've increased the size of the squad. Obviously, my position is that I think Ndombele is a quality player and we could have done better use of them, but that's not really the situation that we're at in a January window. And I, you know, fair enough, that's where we're at now. And then at the same time, if you improve, you know, your midfield and attacking midfield numbers, but you still only have one option at right wing back and he doesn't really do the tasks that you want him to do, or if you're one injury away from two different centre back options from being in a minor crisis, you know, it's not just about, it's about, you know, it's, you can't quantify, I don't think, in a simple number, the coverage situation.
I agree. I don't think the squad, but like Nathan says, we've replaced players we're never using with players that we will use, which is good. So it doesn't change anything. We've got less matches coming up. There's no Europe. There's no League Cup, FA Cup, and Premier League now. That's it now until the end of the season. I think the squad is fine. Yes, there's a fear there, but there's always a fear if we lose one or two players in key positions. A right wing back would have been great. I don't think anything's going to happen. Although I do have a weird feeling that something crazy is going to happen in these last few hours.
Yeah, as it stands at the moment, I can't say in good faith that I feel satisfied with this window at all, because at the start of the window, the three positions that I identified that I would like to see strengthened were right wing back, left centre back, and backup striker. And we've not addressed any of those problems. In fact, we've made Matt Doherty more of a backup right wing back than he was at the start of the window. You could say that Kulusevski could play some backup striker, maybe, but I think that's a bit of a stretch based on what we know at the moment. So I do have some slight concerns about the window, but January transfer windows are always like this. They're always really difficult to do business in. We it's like we forget year on year that this is a tough window in a tough market. Very few clubs address many problems. So I'm kind of thinking we've got to give this at least two windows, to maybe even three, to get to a point where Conte's somewhat happy with the options available to him. So whilst I'm not thrilled with the business, and actually I really like Kulusevski and Bentancur as signings, as it's turned out, I think they're absolutely fine and good. I'm certainly not throwing my toys out the pram about it. I think it's not a terrible window, but it's not spectacular either. Go on, Bardi.
Yeah, I think there's just a little bit more to this January than just the transfer window. I think if you look at the month as a whole, we've learned some things. We've rediscovered is a good player. We've moved on players that aren't being used, and we've added players that will be used. We've survived pretty much without Romero. We've kind of got through without Dyer. We've learned some things. We've improved. Lloris has signed his contract. And I'm not going to be all happy clappy, but I think it's been, as a month, as a whole, as a transfer window month, it's been okay.
I'm going to go back to the same point again, right? Which is, under Daniel Levy, we had this long, long period of time where our business was done not based on so much the needs of the squad, but based on deals, right? If there was a good opportunity for a good player, or what we believed to be a good player, then we would pursue it and we would be prepared to pay a large sum if we still thought it was a good deal. As opposed to identifying the gaps in the squad, going out, making a list of those players, going down the list, working until you find something that you can afford, that you're happy with, your manager's happy with, right? I thought that Paratici coming in would be a change towards that system. We went, right, we need a right wing back, we need a central centre back, we need a left centre back.
That was what the reporting said. All the reporting said that they'd identified those positions.
We would do that. Make a list like I fucking did, right? Make a list of 10, 15 players for those roles, contact the agent, contact the club, inquire about the fees, maybe talk to the player, go back to the manager, back and forth, work your way down the list until you get, you know, even if it's your fifth pick, people get very upset in the football community when they think that their club has picked their fifth pick, but often that's a good pick, right? They're top five in the world. Yeah. So instead, we've picked up two players on good deals because Paratici like knows some guys still at the club and is familiar with those players from having worked at Juventus. It just feels a bit sort of Italian Daniel Levy, which again, you know, again, definitely has its upsides. These are definitely two good players. They're on a good deal. I think there's a fishy thing going on where Bocca are owed like a sell-on percentage from Bentancur, and then we've not paid that much for him, and then there's like maybe a bit more of the fee in Kulishevsky, and that's going on. But regardless, if you put the two of them together and their combined fee, definitely good business for the two of them. It's just like, it's not very director of football, which is what I was expecting.
100%, Nathan, 100%. And I think the chase for Luis Diaz feeds into that absolutely perfectly. And lots of Spurs fans were really unhappy about us not pulling off that transfer, right? And I wasn't, for the exact reasons you just stated. Well, he's a wonderful player.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes these opportunities come along that are too good to pass up, and a player like that becoming available, you just got to throw your chips in and you've got to go for it. But he's not really what we needed. He is exactly what Liverpool need. You know, he's perfect Mane. For Liverpool. He is Mane's long-term replacement.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the same player in terms of what they can offer. It's wonderful, wonderful forward planning from Liverpool. For us, he would have been an incredible player to sign. Incredible, like really exciting.
But where would he play?
Yeah, he's playing on the left. So that means Son's playing where? Is Son playing up front in a 3-5-2? But then if we're playing 3-5-2, there's no one on the left.
The thing with that is that Diaz especially wants to receive the ball to feet out wide and then make things happen. It's like there's not much scope for that under Conte. So I don't know. Again, it would have been an even more extreme version of, yeah, you know, we've managed to, I think the situation was everyone involved was expecting him to go to Liverpool in the summer, and we tried to sneak in early because Porto need the money right now. And so we tried to, like, you know, gazump, and we got reverse gazumped.
I don't think there's any blame attached to Daniel Levy for this, unlike many Spurs fans, because no. Liverpool had an arrangement with Porto whereby they would be informed if anyone else made an offer which was accepted. So they accepted our offer, they told Liverpool, and obviously Liverpool was a better draw than us.
They
obviously
to do it on the quiet, but they have no... it's not in Porto's interest to do it on the quiet if they can then extract more money out of Liverpool.
Exactly that. So yeah, I wasn't too unhappy about the Luis Diaz situation. I think it just sort of fed into my frustration with our strategy or lack of strategy. I think I would really love to know the balance of power in terms of our transfer in inner workings. Because what we know about Spurs is they do have a recruitment team. They've got a team of analysts. They've got a network of scouts, which we know Paratici is prioritising bulking up that network. He's bringing in more scouts. He's working with more scouts. Presumably they use scouting agencies as well. So we have an in-house analyst team. We've got external scouts, and we've got some internal scouts. But like, and I think it's right that anyone in the club should be able to identify a potential signing and then pass that name to the team of analysts who then go off and do the background work. My concern is that all of that happens and they have this wonderful process, and then Paratici just ultimately trumps whatever they've said and says, actually, no, I want to go and get Kulishevsky because I know him and he's really good. And that suddenly becomes a priority. And look, I'm really happy with the signing of Kulishevsky. I think he's good, but I don't think it was an immediate priority, whereas I think right wing back absolutely was. I think left centre back, if Ben Davis gets injured, left centre back will suddenly become a real problem. If Harry Kane gets injured, what are we going to do? So I do have some sort of concerns, and I'd love to know more about how our recruitment team works and how the decision making happens.
It's got to be a madness in those meetings. I mean, I don't think... There has to be, you're right, there has to be a process. We have these positions, let's fill these positions. Oh, no, let's just do this. It can't be. This is like I spent all weekend. I don't know anything that's happened in football this weekend apart from that, because I spent all week trying to build a log cabin in my garden. And Spurs' approach to football can't be like how my dad approaches building a cabin. He just grabs the first thing that he sees and starts whacking it with a hammer. There has to be more professionalism at our club. There's got to be. It can't be just one man's whim deciding what happens with our players.
It used to be Daniel Levy, and now it's Fabio Paratici.
The sight of like Paratici and Hitchin wandering around before every match on their phones. God. And then they're just like, oh, January business is two guys you know from your old club. It's like, what have you been doing?
What
have you been up to every day? Because I've no doubt that they're like extremely hardworking, like maniacs. But like, what are they achieving with their time? Like, they're just I don't know.
I want to see a power shift. And I don't even know what I'm talking about. Of course, I'm speculating completely, because all we get to go on is what the end result is, and there could be a whole load of processes that have happened up to that point that have led us to here. But like, I would want our recruitment team, our team of analysts who look for the data, look for the patterns in data, and then watch video after video after video, finding the right person based upon the specification they've been given by the coaching team. I would want them to be valued higher than anyone at that
point. Aren't.
And clearly they're not. Right?
If they exist.
It is bizarre that these are the key positions we need, and then they just ignore it. And I'm not Enoch out. You know, I didn't turn up at the training ground today with the other 15 people and wave banners around it. It's not me. But it is bizarre that we get through all these months and then arrive in January. And on the 31st of January, we signed two good players, but two players that we probably could have spent that money in more important places. But I don't want to get away from the fact that I'm really happy with Kulusevski. I actually prefer him to Luis Diaz. I'm not too sure on Diaz. I think his age and everything else works against him. Maybe he works, maybe he doesn't. But I think Kulusevski is the better fit for us.
So we've had some outgoing loans as well. Of young players. So Keon Atete was recalled from Northampton in League 2 and has gone to Cheltenham in League 1. He came on at the weekend, apparently did some really good hold-up stuff, so that's a positive move for him. I don't see him as a future first-teamer or anything like it, but I think we can get a good fee for him at some point. Jack Clark has gone to Sunderland, who have immediately sacked their manager, so
sweet.
Great work there, Spurs. Niall John has gone out on his first loan to Charlton in League One, a deal seemingly brokered by Chris Powell. I really like this move for John. I think John is definitely one to keep an eye on. He has a lot of talent. Definitely one I'm excited about for the future, and I expect him to do well at Charlton. And it sounds like Spurs are trying to get Harvey White a loan move. Remember last season he was on loan at Portsmouth in League One. He has spent the first half of this season playing Premier League 2 football, which is utterly pointless in my eyes. So hopefully we'll get a loan for him before the deadline. And that brings us on to the Ollie Tanner situation. So this is a young player, 20-year-old winger for non-league Lewis, who has been impressing with his set pieces and his dribbling ability. He has a really good goal-scoring record. And Spurs ID'd him as a player they want to sign for the under-23s and just sort of see how he progresses. A bit of a punt, I think. And when the links for Tanner came out, it came to light that when he was in his mid-teens, sort of 15 to 60, I think 15, he tweeted some pretty unsavoury stuff about Harry Kane, some jokes which I think could be said to be ableist.
Sure.
I think that's completely fair to say. And also that he's an Arsenal fan, and he tweeted a bunch of anti-Spurs stuff. A not insubstantial number of Spurs fans then absolutely piled into him about those tweets. I've got some things to say about it, but Nathan, where were you on the sort of Ollie Tanner situation?
Well, I mean, look, I think having concerns about him is like legitimate. I think that if the club were to look at those tweets and say, we don't really want to bring this kid to, a guy, I called him a child on Twitter, and he's what is he, 19? You said he was 20. He's 19 or 20.
Yeah.
So, you know, that he was a child at the time that he made those pretty nasty tweets, right? If they say, oh, we don't want to, you know, bring him in to be around Kane or whatever, if we think that that's, you know, not appropriate for the club, fair enough. Even if we have like a no Arsenal fan policy at the club, I think that's fine. That means no Serge Aurier, no Matt Doherty. Some would say that means no Harry Kane. but I don't mind that as an idea. My only problem is him getting, you know, surprise abuse from thousands of Spurs fans. Again, which is, you know, only what he's given, but back at him. But the difference is, like, he's some guy with a couple of thousand Twitter followers who's not ready for that. And he's a young guy, and it's stuff he said years ago when he was, you know, an idiot child. Again, like I've said before, I said some pretty fucking stupid things when I was around that age that I desperately hope never come to light, because I don't want to have to deal with that. You have to allow people the opportunity to sort of to move on and grow up. And we've been very critical of Gattuso. The comparison has been drawn there, and we, you know, we led a campaign for him to not be made our manager. But there's a big difference between what a kid who's 15 says and then, you know, has to face the consequences of that when he's 19 or 20, versus like an adult who said it when he was, you know, an adult. He's in his middle age. He's going to come in and be like the front of our club, and he still now has the opportunity to reflect positively upon the things he said and rebuild his character and reverse his positions on those things. And he doesn't desperately need a job, right? He's a wealthy man. He's been paid well at previous clubs. And he'll go on to other clubs. So it's a very different situation there. Again, I don't mind us, you know, going back on this deal for those reasons. I don't mind Spurs fans sort of bringing it up even as a way of trying to get the club's attention. But the problem with that is that inevitably what happened, which is that he receives a whole bunch of crap, which he doesn't need to receive. That's it.
This is the thing. This is the thing when people become famous, their social media accounts get scrutinized and things they said as youngsters are brought to light. I mean, my cricket team, Sussex, had the same with Ollie Robinson, who's their fast bowler who went on to play for England, and that's when a whole bunch of stuff that Ollie Robinson has said came to light, and he was desperately sorry. I think Azeem Rafiq is a wonderful example of someone who said some bad things as a youngster, yeah, and then shown genuine remorse and looked to sort of learn and grow and move beyond that. And I think that should be the norm for people, that they are able to have made some mistakes as children. He's a literal child, and to be given the freedom to accept that he was wrong and to learn from that. And if he doesn't want to learn from that, then that's something different. That's, you know, if he's still saying horrible things now, get him out of my club. Absolutely. But I completely agree with Nathan's stance that we need to give people an opportunity to be better before we castigate them. And this ties into something else that happened for me this week. So I got a really interesting email, about Lucas and some of Lucas's Twitter likes from a correspondent who I'm not going to name, but who has been brilliantly enlightening about the situation in Brazil, who lives out there and has a lot of local context, and who actually originally gave Lucas the benefit of the doubt for voting for and promoting Bolsonaro, who is the fascist president of Brazil. And Lucas has liked a tweet fairly recently, which is vile. It's about the murder of a black gay female political activist, who basically was murdered for being those three things. It was not a nice situation at all. And as well as liking that, unfortunately, Lucas has also liked some pretty horrendous transphobic content recently, and alongside some quite pathetic anti-leftist memes that he likes on the reg, he's also liked some pro-Bolsonaro tweets. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is acceptable to me. That is not acceptable to me as a fan who wants our club to be inclusive. So solidarity with our LGBTQ plus fans, and I think the club should be acting to speak to Lucas and educate him, and at the very least ask him to pretend that he doesn't support some of these horrendous tweets. even if secretly he does. But I really think that shows up a hypocrisy amongst Spurs fans, that they are turning a blind eye to some of the vile stuff that Lucas is liking, you know, and it's there for everyone to see, you know, just scroll through his likes. And yet this young boy got a pylon.
Spurs fans are a weird bunch. They always rush to, God forbid anyone says anything bad about Harry Kane, they rush to protect him. And you're right, this Lucas shenanigans on social media, it needs to be stopped. Either the club need to do something and make him aware of what he's doing. It's unacceptable that the things he's liking and things he's commenting on. I missed the whole Ollie Tanner thing, and which is a shame. I would have quite enjoyed some of the Twitter beef that was happening around that. He was a child. He was 15 years old. And I honestly think to stop that happening because of a couple of tweets when he's 15 years old is a bit over the top. People change. People educate. We're different persons. We all every day is about educating and becoming a better person, and you have to allow people to do that.
Yeah, I must admit I made a cock up, because there was this report that Ollie Tanner had not joined Spurs because of the backlash, and that turned out to not be true. And I shouldn't have tweeted about that. I did tweet about that, and I shouldn't have done until it was confirmed. But I sort of felt quite upset about the prospect of that, which is why I tweeted from the heart and not from the head, which was stupid. Just a reminder that if there are any trans football fans listening who don't feel they have somewhere to discuss football, you're very welcome in our Discord community. Just drop us a DM and we'll arrange that for you.
Yeah.
Benjamin R. Holmes got in touch. Spurs have put a role live, an audience and insights analyst role, and Benjamin's point was, I thought it was interesting that they've put out a job for an audience and insight analyst a week ago amongst all the absolute craziness on Twitter. Thought it could be an interesting talking point or something to share. And yeah, I mean, this is fascinating, because Twitter has been going through an absolute meltdown during the last couple of weeks of the transfer window. Bardi, have you managed to steer clear of this? What have you made of the goings on?
I mean, Twitter is a weird place anyway.
No, this is next level though, for Spurs Twitter.
It's always next level. There's not a guide. There's not a pH scale you can look at it. It's always next level. It's always more over the top. It's always the end of the world. People just need to calm down, man. It's a football club. And things are bad, things are good. And 2 days ago, the people were crying, we haven't signed anybody. Now we've gone out and signed two international players, and they're still upset. It's just relax. Enjoy your football. We started the pod by talking about two people who've suffered, one person who suffered a significant loss, and someone else is battling for their life. There are much bigger things to really get pent up and get upset about. Enjoy your life. Enjoy the people around you. And don't worry that Tottenham haven't signed a bloody player. It doesn't matter.
Well said. I also think the last 2 years has been really, really hard for everyone. Some people more than most. There's been a lot of loss, and that might not be loss of a friend or a family member. It might be loss of your hobbies, your ability to see your friends, your whatever it might be, independence. So it's been really tough. And sort of tying your ability to have a good day to Spurs' ability to sign players just seems like a really bad idea to me, because
we're
not good at signing players.
You can't base your mood around something as fragile as Tottenham Hotspur, as fragile as football. It's a sport, it's a business, and you can't base how you're feeling along Tottenham. If you put all your feelings and invest all your feelings and heart into Tottenham Hotspur, it's just going to disappoint you. You sit down and read about this club. It's a wonderful and fantastic club because it's fucking batshit mental. And that's why we keep going towards it. And yeah, don't use Tottenham as a way to find happiness, because you're not going to find it. Enjoy the things that Tottenham give you. Enjoy the madness. Enjoy signing Kulusevski when we need a right wing back. And 100% against Brighton, somebody's hamstring will go, and then it will all just start again.
Ping.
And now it will be next level. And you see, that's why there is no next level, because it's just a continuation of people losing their minds.
Totter Bergdahl, we've covered some of this, but Totter says, and I have to apologize if I've got that pronunciation right, it could be Turter. I'm Swedish and I'm extra interested in the Kulusevski signing. I think it would be a great signing. This is obviously before it happened, because of the versatility of the player. In a Conte system, I can see him playing in central midfield, attacking midfield, all forward roles, and also as a right wing back. Long term, I can really see him as a right wing back because of his stamina and defensive turnovers. What do you think about that?
I can't see it. I really can't see it. I just like so we sort of spoke about his speed and how much he doesn't have. I don't know. He looks slower than he is, but he's still not fast. I still think he like I get the impression when I watch him that like as a youth player he dribbled around players a lot and he's had to adapt to like not having that same ability to create separation against like other top level players so much, and he's developed his creative game around that. That's just my guess. I don't think that suits right wing back. Obviously, you know, he's left footed. I don't know. I'm not saying he could never cover right wing back, but I think Lucas is a better fit for right wing back than Kulishevsky is.
He's left footed, he says, forgetting that he literally produced a video about inverted wing backs a couple of weeks ago. And I think that video made some really good points that Kulishevsky could be useful in addressing. I can see it happening late in games where we're struggling to open up a pack defence. You know, he's got good creative passing with the kind of reverse passes that he likes coming in field. And you would be able to play, you know, as an inverted right wing back coming inside, there would be an opportunity there to play some reverse passes. And you can imagine someone like, I don't know, Bergwijn or Son running onto those. So I think maybe late in games it's a possibility.
Hild's loan has been announced, and the reporting now is that the Bergwijn to Ajax move is definitely off.
Oh, good, good.
I thought it was going to be one of those
dramatic thoughts. Sorry,
dramatic. Sorry, you know that that meme where Tyrion re-puts his hand on Carragher's leg. That's what I thought was going to happen. I was going to virtually put my hand on your leg, Nathan.
I wonder if those things are related. I wonder if it's like, okay, we've got Hill off our books, we've got Ndombele off our books. One of Dele and Lo Celso is likely to go. Therefore, we no longer need to shift you, and you're at least somewhat in Conte's plans. I definitely think he should be. So,
well, that was the reporting at least a couple of days ago that Conte has said he likes Bergwijn. He's happy for him to stay at the club. He's clearly a player. And I think Conte identifying that he could play up front and his system was that happened quite early on, and we didn't see it initially. But I think that's
we've really seen it now.
Yeah, I think that's a really insightful piece of
the smart guy.
He said that early, having barely watched the guy, and it's absolutely true. He's got a really lovely feathery first touch, just bringing the ball out of the air, and he's also very good at protecting the ball. So I think there's a lot of potential there. For Bergwijn sort of covering some of it. I mean, I'm not saying that we're keen to get injured. I want Bergwijn to lead the line by himself, but I think playing off someone is absolutely a possibility for him. I really do. Final question is from Kevin, who says, do you think the oversaturation of ITK and general coverage of the game means that Levy's transfer strategy has been bypassed? Meaning that if everyone is acutely aware of how you do business, then there is less...
Then they're less likely to fall.
Then they are less likely to fall for the ploys and tactics he'd used previously. If every once in a while he just paid the asking price or kicked in the extra 5 to 10 million instead of milking it for every last penny, teams would be more likely to deal. Instead of every deal feeling like Levy is trying to get one over on people, clubs might think, well, if they really want the player, they'll play up. They'll pay up. If nothing else, just to start shift the thinking. No club seems to have more trouble moving players in or out, and I believe it's down to strategy and the reputation of the chairman. Now that is some wild, not that it's some wild revelation, obviously, but in baseball, if you throw fastball after fastball, hitters eventually anticipate and capitalise. But if you mix in a curveball or change it up every now and again, it keeps hitters off balance.
It's an interesting idea. So I guess the sort of thinking is that like, we wanted to keep the Luis Diaz stuff quiet. We failed to. But Liverpool didn't find out through the press. They found out through having an agreement with Porto, right? Which is not to say something like that couldn't possibly happen. I do think that like technology and speed of communication has changed a bit. It's WhatsApp instead of faxing nowadays. And so it's like if someone's offered you something, you can quickly immediately message out. Obviously, you could call before, but you can immediately message out the three other directors of footballs who might be interested in and get sort of a bid going rather than, you know, I think especially on deadline day. On deadline day, Daniel Levy calls you up and there's 2 hours before the window closes and he's making you an offer and you kind of need to make a decision right there and then, whereas maybe now through the wonders of technology. I mean, we've been texting for a while. I don't know. Maybe I'm jumping on that, but you can... I think just as much like his And again, it's Leicester goes with Paratici in place now, but there was becoming a thing where, like, he had personally alienated so many other directors that they didn't want to deal with him, and they knew what he was about. They knew his businesses and his tricks and his, like, the thing where he, like, agrees an unofficial term, waits for that club to buy the replacement, and then comes back with a lower bid than he'd previously said. Not a great way to make a lot of friends. And there's only so many other clubs that are, like, in our marketplace that you can do that to before no one wants to deal with you. I'm surprised that we're doing business with Lyon again. It looked like they would simply never want to deal with us again. But maybe that proves the point that if you have assets that are worth it, people won't mind how you behave.
Well, I think that's, you know, as we sort of discussed earlier, I think that's why he brought in Paratici. It's not necessarily because there's a different approach. It's to delegate some of the duties. Yeah, and it's literally a different face doing the same thing that he always did. And I will sort of take issue with Kevin's point about the sort of get one over on people. I don't think it's ever about that. I mean, maybe it's a little bit about that for Levy, but it's getting the best value, isn't it? And getting the best deal for the club. So it's putting it's creating a situation where you have leverage. You have the upper hand. You hold all the cards, and so leaving it late puts pressure on the opposition club, because it's now or never. You have to make a decision now, and so you're more likely to accept less money than you might have done at an earlier stage in the transfer window. And that's where his sort of his steely-eyed determination to see it through to the last day comes into its own. And I do sort of think, I think there might be something in this point that Kevin's making, that we now know so much about his strategy. Everyone understands what he's like as a negotiator. Everyone's got this detailed history because of, not necessarily ITK, but, you know, reporting. Detailed reporting where people find out snippets. That does mean that he perhaps needs to change. And again, that might be quite important strategy.
I mean, I find ITK fascinating. It's the most ridiculous concept in modern football. It's none of it's true. It's just an opinion. Somebody has an opinion and it gets passed down and it becomes ITK. Now, if I want one day when I have time, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to do like a thesis on ITK, because let's just ponder amongst ourselves the ITK that we've witnessed. Tanganga to Milan, it didn't happen. And we had that from pretty good sources. Traore to Tottenham, didn't happen. Doherty to Wolves, didn't happen. ITK doesn't exist. It's all bullshit.
No, but
it's all bullshit. Maybe occasionally, and I pretend to be ITK because I'm making a mockery of the ITK, that it doesn't exist. All it is somebody's opinion repeated and repeated. And Kulusevski was supposed to sign for Arsenal.
But, buddy, I quite fancy a glass of water right now, right? But I'm recording a podcast, so I'm not going to go and get a glass of water. But that doesn't mean I don't want a glass of water.
No, but that doesn't. The whole point is this oversaturation of ITK. It's not ITK. It's just gossip bollocks.
No, but
it's all it is. We've been talking about Kulusevski since last summer, and people pointed to. I do it as well, just to take the mic. People pointed to a comment by the Spurs web or whoever in June that I told you this was going to happen.
All it is an opinion. We don't talk about them on this podcast.
Maybe it wasn't them. Maybe it was Bison something. I don't know. But it's all nonsense. ITK doesn't exist. Nobody's in the know. Everybody's just guessing. And there's fields and fields of ITK that never happened. And there's one small patch that is actually true.
Yeah.
That's it.
There are three guys who messaged me if everything they've ever said has always come true.
Who? Reveal your source.
No one reveals it. Of course not. Reveal my sources.
Nothing. It's not true. Nothing. It doesn't always come true.
But it is true. It is true, buddy.
Some people know people who work at clubs.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of people don't and make stuff up. And a lot of people are like seven people down the chain. But like, information leaks all the time.
We're really bad at keeping information unleaked. We're not very good at plugging the leaks as a club.
Because it doesn't exist. I honestly believe it does not exist.
But so you think clubs are absolutely watertight, that the only time a transfer, that anything can possibly be true, is when it actually happens, because clubs are so good at keeping things in-house.
Now, Nathan may have a friend or two that works inside a club, and that's probably true. But Nathan hasn't told me, and he hasn't told you. So it's not out there. The majority, and that's what I mean by the oceans of ITK, is all bollocks.
There's a lot of bollocks. There is, mostly bollocks. There are a lot of people who make things up.
Like me.
I was told a week ago that that Charlton were going to sign one of Spurs' young players on loan. Nigel John eventually moved to Charlton. I wrongly assumed that it was Marcel Lavinia because there was a hint that it was going to be someone who plays... They said someone who plays in the wing. I think they got Nigel John's position wrong. So I thought it might have been Lavinia. It was Nigel John. So someone knew something and it happened. That's ITK, right? That's someone's given me some legit ITK. Equally, someone told me that when we were going to sign Sofyan Amrabat, that... they were concerned about that because he'd also been offered to some clubs that were well below Spurs' level and that Fiorentina were trying to get rid of him to whoever would take him. Like that, he's not moved now. He's not moved on. That doesn't mean that wasn't true.
But that's what I mean. It's now dead ITK. It didn't happen.
But the person who told me that would know.
Windy, we can't explain object permanence to Bardi on the podcast. <we're not.
laughs> the only ITK that the IREX subs believe is Bardi ITK, obviously.
It's true. Because I get mine from good sources, good journalists.
I do very... Whenever I see the Don't Believe His Lies Polaroid with a picture of Bardi, I do... It does raise a smile every single time.
Good.
Because I'm not... I'm going to reveal now, I don't know anything.
No!
Oh
my God.
No, none of my ITK is true. I have no sources. I have someone in the Fighting Cock WhatsApp group who's always wrong, and I just report what he says. I have Windy and Nathan who doesn't tell me anything. That's it. So the rest of the time, I just make it up. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I was right on Kulusevski. I have a Swedish chap who's really excited to take Aphex.
You're naming your sources.
I'm naming my source.
Aphex is an absolute psychopath in the best possible way.
And he's been in my DMs for 6 months telling me about Kulusevski. And he gets the kind of
Bardi,
attention...
That's not because
that
he knows, it's because he likes the player.
True, but he gets the kind of attention from me that patrons have to pay for. So I should start charging him because we are DMing quite a lot. And he's very excited today. So if he's happy, I'm happy.
No, that's lovely. That is lovely. I do. Mm. It does feel really nice for Sweden. We haven't had many Swedish players. I think, was Erik Edman the last Swedish player we had?
I think so.
So it's really, we have obviously, Spurs have a huge following in Scandinavia and Sweden, you know, we've got loads of Swedish fans. So this is a good day for Swedish Spurs fans.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davy Shambles and his SoundCloud E. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.